Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, today is primary day in the state of New Hampshire. We'll, I'm sure, have plenty to say about that tomorrow. But for the most part, we'll be talking a little bit about things around the fringes of the campaign. Martini number two will probably deal more with the New Hampshire primary than anything else. But we've got some good news from U.S. News and World Report. They polled a number of people at the start of the year and said, what do you fear most? And they basically mean politically and internationally in the year 2012. And the number one thing people feared, with 33% of the vote, was the re-election of President Obama. The 16% of the people feared a loss by President Obama. So by a 2-to-1 margin, people are more afraid of him actually staying president than losing. So that's a good thing for us. The number, obviously, we'd like to see higher, a little bit closer to 50%. But that's pretty passionate when you consider where we stand right now. Jim, a 2-to-1 margin is something I'll take any day.
It is. And I think that it kind of gets to the crux of what this election is going to turn into once the general election begins and the Republican nominee is picked, which is to say to President Obama, what evidence can you give us that anything will be better in your second term than it has been in your first term? He will not really have much to point to. I think, you know, what's really interesting is that it will really be like the second 2 years of this term, because the chances of the Republicans losing the House are pretty darn low. The idea of Obama being reelected in a landslide and sweeping in a whole bunch of House Democrats seems pretty unlikely, even though circumstances can change. Obviously, Obama's best case scenario, what he will be arguing for, is we need to go back to the first 2 years of my presidency, which obviously American people did not like, and they rejected House Democrats and you know, Democrats by a wide margin in, you know, all across the country, the red tide of 2010. So the Republican option is going to say, look, you know, every challenger is inherently a gamble. Every challenger is an unproven commodity. But Obama is a proven commodity, and you know what? It's pretty lousy. And even though we're starting to see the occasional slight downtick in the unemployment rate with our shrinking labor force, this is not what Obama was you know, supposed to deliver. Ironically, 4 years ago during the New Hampshire primary, he talked about the dangers of false hope. Well, that's what he's delivered here. So this poll number is good. It kind of, you know, let us know that for no matter how loused up things get in the Republican primary, foreshadowing Martini number two, we have evidence of a deeply dissatisfied country that is looking for something better, and the Republican Party has a chance to provide that better option.
I should point out that the second thing people fear most is higher taxes. So those two are pretty much one and two, and there's a little bit of a drop-off between the next thing, which I think was right about 16% again at an Iranian nuke and President Obama losing. So a huge gap there, and the top two are clearly things that we are hoping the American people are feeling, and it seems they are. So let's hope that they don't get distracted from that by the relentless anti-Republican nominee approach from the Obama reelection campaign. On to Martini number two, and as Jim said, this relates to the Republican race for the nomination, and anytime we start to get to actual votes, things get a little rough and tumble. Meanwhile, Newt Gingrich is going after Romney with both barrels, clearly blaming Mitt entirely for his fallback in Iowa. And to some extent, he's probably right. But it's interesting, Jim, that with everything in Mitt Romney's record that you could go after from a non-conservative standpoint that Mitt Romney's done over the years, they're going after his days at Bain Capital and buying up these companies, reassessing, retooling, in some cases making successes out of them like Staples, and in some cases just deciding that it's not going to work and basically detonating the thing. But here's Newt Gingrich in one of many statements, this one on Fox News, in the last couple days.
If we have a potential nominee who can't take the heat in February, you sure don't want to discover that in September. So I think Governor Romney owes all of us a press conference where he explains what happened to the companies that went bankrupt and why did Bain make so much money out of companies that were going bankrupt.
And if that weren't enough, Mitt Romney said this, which most of you have probably heard now, on Monday, which just about every GOP rival went after, frothingly at the mouth.
It also means that if you don't like what they do, you can fire them. I like being able to fire people who provide services to me. If someone doesn't give me the good service I need, I want to say, you know, that I'm going to go get somebody else to provide that service to me. And so that's one thing I'd change.
And the sad thing here, Jim, is yes, Romney probably could have phrased that a little more artfully, but it was clear the point he was making there is that people like to have choices. I believe he was talking about health insurance at the time. You know, people should have the ability to pursue the service and the people who provide the service that do the best job of that. Now there are folks like Huntsman and to some extent Gingrich, although he's backed off a little bit on that one, and some of the others up there in New Hampshire saying that Mitt Romney just gleefully likes to fire people who are relying on him and his company for their jobs, and that's clearly not what he was saying.
Not only is what Mitt Romney's saying perfectly fine and unobjectionable, it is at its heart a big chunk of the conservative worldview, which is that government tends to give crappy services because it doesn't have competition. What are we trying to do in education? Create school choice, give parents options. Why do we hate going to the DMV? Because there's no other leading brand DMV we can go to that's giving the competition. They can provide crappy service because you have nowhere else to go. 90% of all government services are like this. There's no private competition to Social Security. Well, I guess you could say that, you know, individual retirement accounts are. But in other words, in every single service, you know, one of the basic fundamental concepts of the free market conservative worldview, which, by the way, now turns out that almost no one in the Republican field has, is that competition is good. And that, you know, one of the problems of the government is that it's many services it provides a monopoly. And that because there's no competition, you end up, you know, eroding the work ethic. You end up eroding the desire to do something better. There is no rival Department of Commerce. There is no rival Internal Revenue Service. There's nobody else doing the same things that, if we don't do a good job, we won't have it. The same way that Radio America has other radio syndicates, National Review has other conservative publications. All of us in the private sector have some sort of competition who we need to stay on our toes to compete against. This is the entire concept of what Mitt Romney is saying. And because it sounds like he enjoys the suffering of others, every single one of these desperate losers in the rest of this campaign are grabbing onto it, trying to persuade people that there's something wrong with it. Go ahead and just poop on a police car, guys, because most of the Republican field has gone out and hugged the entire mentality of the Occupy Wall Street movement. They basically deep down are arguing there's no such thing as a good layoff. There's no such thing as a necessary layoff. Layoffs are ipso facto immoral. The profits of Bain Capital are immoral. And Greg, if this is the mentality the Republican nominee is going to take into the, you know, you cannot undo liberal economic policies by echoing liberal economic rhetoric. And that's what Perry, Gingrich, and Huntsman have all done. Santorum has been a fairly noble guy of not jumping on the Bain criticism bandwagon. Occasionally, he gets into a little bit of class warfare, emphasizing his humble roots and trying to, you know, draw the contrast with the Romney as a child of privilege. But there's been an appalling turn in the Republican debate. I go from having beefs with these guys to basically arguing these guys will tear down the entire concept of free market economics if they need just for a couple extra points in New Hampshire. This tells us everything we need to know about Newt Gingrich, Rick Perry, and John Huntsman.
That is absolutely well stated in every conceivable way, and it's fitting here that I think most of us realize that Newt Gingrich has reached his zenith in this race and is just trying to drag down Romney as he spends the rest of the money he's got in his bank account. And if, in fact, nothing changes for Newt Gingrich in this race from where he is right now, he will have started this race and ended this race by providing the Democrats with better material than they could have ever dreamed up on their own. Between the Paul Ryan quip and now what he's saying about private enterprise, I think you're exactly right. Dead on.
That's an excellent point. I mean, you can summarize this race in four bests. Rick Santorum is the sweater vest. Mitt Romney is the pinstripe suit vest. Rick Perry is the hunting vest. And Newt Gingrich is the suicide vest.
Unfortunately, that seems to be true. Just when he seemed to be righting the ship, we found out that this campaign was always about him and not about making sure that conservative principles got back to the White House. Or if it is, he's doing it in a very bizarre way. On to martini number three now, and the crazy one. And let's go back to the Obamas and their White House. And for the fourth time, the president's got a new chief of staff. First it was Rahm Emanuel, then it was Pete Rouse, then it was Bill Daley, the former Commerce Secretary and guy who ran Al Gore's 2000 campaign. And, you know, he just couldn't quite stick it out through the campaign, as was his original plan. Bill Daley is out. Apparently, Michelle Obama not a big fan of his. Apparently, he's not a big fan of Valerie Jarrett really running the White House instead of him. Well, now we've got Jack Lew, who, of course, was the man behind the budget that zero Democrats in the Senate supported this year as the new chief of staff. So I'm sure good things and a lot of stability are headed to the White House in the next few months, Jim.
I knew that the last name was Daley. I did not realize that that's how often Obama changes his chief of staff. He's up to four, and he's through like 3 years of his term. Apparently, this is more than almost any other first-term president has had. There is perhaps one mild silver lining to this. And let's face it, most Americans don't pay that much attention to who the chief of staff is. I've heard some people say that these are the rats leaving the ship or the grown-ups are leaving. But what somebody observed is that most of the folks who were with Obama in running the government in the first couple of years of his administration are now working on the Obama re-election campaign. As they have departed, you've seen a whole bunch of people who were, in effect, Hillary people coming in and staffing these positions in the federal government. So I guess you could say, in a way, Hillary won, just in a delayed fashion. and, you know, we could probably argue that we probably should have some sort of backup president because Obama's going to spend effectively all of this year on the campaign trail. He was at fundraisers again last night, Greg. You know, no word of other Johnny Depp and Tim Burton were at this one. But, you know, he's doing what he likes, hanging around with big Donald donors and celebrities, you know, doing the job of president as he sees it.
Well, and it was $45,000 a head. So I'm sure a lot of the Occupy Wall Streeters were at tables right in the front there.
Well, I'm sure he talked about the need for, you know, the problems of selfishness and greed and the need for, you know, not being too tight-fisted with your money. Give to Obama.
That's right. And to make matters worse for those who are still infesting the parks in New York and Washington, which now has a huge rat problem where the occupiers are hanging out, by the way. This will make them happy. Jack Lew, in addition to being clueless on actually making the budget balance, apparently he's a former hedge fund executive at Citi and who made quite a bit of money off of mortgage defaults. So Obama's your guy, occupiers.
Let's go up there with way to go, Nevada.
That's right.
Obama's your guy, occupiers. Obama's your guy.
Exactly right. All right, Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Another punchy edition tomorrow, Greg.
Absolutely. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus for Radio America. If you live in New Hampshire, make sure you get out and vote today. And Joel will be talking about it tomorrow on Wednesday's 3 Martini Lunch.